All right, so we are, today is the 16th of January, 2020. It is the 19th day of Tevis, Tavshin Pei, and we are up to Halacha Day of Perek Yud Aleph. So the Pasuk, in Yud Aleph has the Parsha of, the second Parsha of Kriya Shema, which also contains the Mitzvah of Mezuzah and the Mitzvah of Tvilin. So when we did the first Parsha of Kriya Shema a couple of weeks ago, we did some Hilchus Mezuzah, so maybe today we'll do some Hilchus Tefillin. So just raise two issues with regards to purchasing. Well, one quickly, just an interesting thing, and then one a little more complicated. It's Perek Yud Aleph. So we have...
What parsha?
What parsha? What parsha? We're in Ekev now, towards the very end of Ekev. Okay, so there is actually an interesting note, I guess, in the Mishnah Berurah. Do I have it in this Mishnah Berurah? That's the question. It looks like I do. All right, in the Mishnah Berurah, so in Simen Lamed Vav, that's where the halachos of writing the letters are found, and then the Mishnah Berurah goes for a section that he calls the Mishnah Sofrim. The Mishnah Sofrim is where he spells out or writes out and diagrams a little bit what at least in his opinion, the appropriate way of writing letters would be. So each, and that has sort of become the new standard. So even though if you look at Sifrei Torah from 60, 70, 80, 90 years ago, some of them are not following these standards. Now pretty much most, 95% of quality stuff that is written today, both Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs, are all, if they're writing in Beis Yosef, style, so then they would be following the positions of the Mishnah Berurah, which is part of the reason why the prices have gone up a little bit, and that is they've become much more formalized. Everybody's really writing in the same way anyways, so there's not much of a difference between higher level things and lower level things, so mm-hmm. Other than perhaps some aesthetic issues. So therefore, the people, if I'm writing according to halacha already, I'm not going to sell it for a low price, I'm going to sell it for a higher price. So therefore, the low-end mezuzahs have become harder to find. Certainly, kosher low-end mezuzahs have become harder to find at the lower prices. I've even noticed in the 3 years since I've been doing this, that has changed. So in that section, he has a little bit of an introduction, and the Chafetz Chaim makes a comment there about which is more, it seems to imply an answer to the question of which is more important. When one buys tefillin, is it better to have nicer batim, or is it better to have nicer parshios? Which is which is considered more necessary? So the Mishnah Berurah here writes, "Far isi anashim yiri shemayim mefazun mamun rav al tikun tefilehem," that I have found people that are Yiri Shemayim that spend a lot of money on their tefillin, that are able to buy the batim, the cases from that are beautiful and detailed according to halacha, and everything's fine. That's great. You have to be very careful about what goes inside the tefillin. That the sofer should do all the letters appropriate according to all their details and their durim, the way that they should be nice. Therefore, to do that, he has to be an expert in writing the letters. And he should also be doing his work patiently. That if even one letter is not written right according to in all of its details, huma'akev, that could perhaps passel the entire tefillin. In chaser b'haksav ha'tagin o akotzel shayud mevuar, and even if it's missing a tag or a little spot of the little mark that comes off the end of the yud, then that perhaps you could add later, and then he gets to some of the lachos of what you're allowed to add later. But that distinction of buying nice batim versus buying nice parshios, so Mishnah Berurah says that apparently in his time, so that people were being more careful about the batim than they were with the parshios. So there is a sefer for anybody. This is really a wonderful sefer called Inside Stam by someone named Rabbi Reuven Mendlowitz. He lives in Ramat Beit Shemesh. When I spent Shabbos there a couple of, a year ago, right? Well, in May. So he, Mendlowitz. He grew up in America. He grew up, I think, in the Five Towns, just judging by who writes the
by who he has hascamas from in the beginning. But it's really a wonderful sefer in terms of some of the, this is sort of like the first thing I read when I got into this, really opens up a lot of the issues that we don't really think about. You know, we just go by tefillin, we go by mezuzahs, right? What's going into what distinguishes between one from another? So he points out, he says, I'm not really sure the Mishnah Berurah is really taking a strong stand and saying that, oh, make sure the parshios are, if you have money to spend on one and not the other, make sure the parshios are really nice and the bottom aren't. He was just making an observation about what was going on during that time. So what should a person do? They should really try to get the nicest parshios they could find, the nicest bottom they could find. In fact, the quotes here, he said that was his thought, and then someone shared with him that someone asked Rav Yashav this question. Only has enough money to buy one or the other, really mehudar batim or really mehudar parshios. Which one should he do? And Rav Yashav responded by saying, "What's the difference, right? If one of them is not mehudar, so then you don't have mehudar tefillin. It might have kosher tefillin, but not going to have mehudar tefillin. So you should try to do both." Now he does make a point here in one of the footnotes, which is mehudar means beautiful. Very nice. Now, actually, we should just pause that when people ask me about mehudar, I always point out that there's really two types of mehudar. It can really mean two different things. Mehudar could mean just beautiful, just very nice, that the letters look very nice. What does that mean? So generally, the quality of writing is judged based on like consistency of the letters, that the letters are the same size, that the spaces between them are the same, that they don't get crushed together because he ran out of space at the end of a line, things like that. Those are all aesthetic issues, which we try to have nice aesthetic things when we do mitzvahs. We should have, you know, nice things, but not really halachically mehudar. There is also something called halachically mehudar, and that is that there are various chumras, various stringencies. So, and that can also mean two things. One is all of the lines, all of the dots are there, meaning the tagim, anything that comes out the top of letters are all there and clearly recognizable, and that's sort of halachically, one halachic mehudar issue. The other halachic mehudar issue are chumras in the writing. That writing could have, and I'm not sure if you've gone through this, if certainly gone through this in the past in other venues, that has to do with the way things are correct and some of the details in Hilchos Tefillin. So there's some things that one could be mekel on and things that one could be machmer on, and in order for something to qualify sort of in the stam world as being mehudar, so it's sort of expected that it follows various chumras, various stringencies. I actually have with me, this is a mehudar mezuzah that was written by my nephew, Eliezer Katz, in Eretz Yisrael. So it's he happens to write very nicely, and he qualifies as the ascetic mehudar business. But he also has these. I asked him to write with these chumras so that, you know, people have that request and people will pay for those requests in order to make it. All right, but don't. Well, you, no, I mean, I need it for something else to show later, but you can take a quick look. Fine. So that's A. Now there is an interesting discussion that has to do with the issue of sirtut. What are sirtut? So if you look carefully at any stam product, or I should say almost any stam product, although that's so clear in these actually, I'm just think of it. Yeah, no, now you can see it, right? Those are the sketches, the lines that are sort of sketched into the mezuzahs, right? The straight lines that they scratch in order to be able to write straight, right? So that is certainly, so that is, we assume, is required in all mezuzahs. The Gemara says required in all mezuzahs in Sifrei Torah. So it seems to conspicuously absent from that is tefillin, right? It seems like the Gemara doesn't mention that siirtut are ma'akiv when it comes to tefillin. So the Tosfos there explains, he says, yeah. So one could say, well, it just obviously, if it's mezuzah in Sifrei Torah, it's going to be the same thing for tefillin. So Tosfos says, well, hold on a second, it might be a little different. What's the difference between mezuzahs versus, well, tefillin versus Sifrei Torah? Let's just start with that. So Sifrei Torah are regularly seen, and tefillin are not, right? Tefillin, once the parshios are written, so you write them and you stick them in the tefillin batim, and not to be opened again for another, we could do another shiur on how often you should check your tefillin, but let's say every 15 years, like the Aruch HaShulchan, right? You're not going to see it again. So perhaps the requirement for ascetic mehudarness, if that's a word, right, maybe doesn't apply when it comes to the parshios of tefillin. Aye, what about mezuzahs? So mezuzahs, maybe there's a reason to check them more often. People might open them more, whatever. Mezuzahs sort of are judged. People give answers why mezuzahs maybe are different than tefillin in this context. But Tosfos there suggests that maybe it's the idea of something being ascetically mehudar, not halachically mehudar, but ascetically mehudar, maybe doesn't apply when it comes to tefillin. However, not everybody agrees to that. There are those that point out that they bring proofs, a proof from the Aron. The Aron that Moshe, we talked about this, what was it, last week? In the last parak, we talked about the Aron. So the Aron that was made by Moshe Mitzal for the Mishkan, so famously it says that it needs to have gold on the outside and it needs to have gold on the inside. Right? That it needs to be both. No one's going to ever see the inside. No, even things that are on the inside that we're not going to see should be aesthetically pleasing as well. He quotes here that the Gra, he thinks Paskin's like Tosos in this issue, but that's a little bit of a machlok. I mean, it's not a major machlok, but that's a machlokus when it comes to tefillin, whether there is such an idea of being aesthetically mahudr for the parshios, right? The batim will be, also should certainly be, because that's seen and beautiful, etc., right? And people sometimes, you know, will paint on it and stuff like that. So you should do your best to make them look nice. They should make them look good. But the parshios insides, that's a little bit more of a question, how important is that they be aesthetically pleasing. Often they're going to go hand in hand, meaning something that's halachically mahudr is going to be aesthetically mahudr. I mean, it just means that it's written by an expert sofer, so it's usually going to go hand in hand, but then that's an interesting detail of machlokus, which perhaps has other applications in other areas of halachas. Yeah, did you have your hand up? No? Okay. All right. The one thing I wanted to talk about.
It can't be produced by like a machine.
No, well, I shouldn't say absolutely not. There is a bit of a discussion about that, about using silk screen to write the Sifrei Torah. I mean, it certainly needs to be written l'shma. So, I mean, for the purpose of whatever the mitzvah is you do, and that's required. So there are other areas of halacha that we assume it has to be written l'shma, and we use machines for that. So, we assume it's halachically justifiable to use machines for those things. So one thing that comes to mind is matzos. Right? Matzahs need to be made l'shma. So our machine matzahs fulfill that? So despite what the matzah industrial complex wants you to believe, the answer is yes. The answer is that matzahs that you buy in a box are for the most part shmura matzahs, according to what our standard with shmura matzah requires. And even the l'shma aspect is there, because when the person pushes the buttons and starts the machine, they're saying l'shem matzahs mitzvah. So, and therefore we assume, so therefore it's probably okay, and there are gedolim over the years that have used machine matzos for their siddurim, more in the Litvish world than the Hasidish world, but the Hasidim sort of rule the world today, so therefore, you know, I dare you to try to find a seder where they're using, where they're not using hand shmur matzos for the matzos mitzvah, but Mikra din, it's fine. Same thing with tzitzis as well. There are machine made tzitzis. And then there's machlokes. There's hidurim when it comes to tzitzis as well. That get into this issue of what could be made by, can the threads be made by a machine? Can it be, you know, how much of it can be done by machine and still be okay? I was going to add in one more. So that's always a machlokes. So could you say the same thing when it comes to writing a Sefer Torah? That just printed, you push the button, or you set the type, you know, set the silk screen, and you stamp it down, and that should be okay. So there are those that have made the suggestion that should be okay. Well, it would be a lot less expensive, and the truth is, it would be a lot more kosher, right? Because once you have the type set, so then it's good to go. So there have been those that have claimed this should be okay. It has not gained. I don't think there are any silkscreen Sifrei Torah in use. Certainly no silkscreen tefillin that are being sold by Frum, by certified Stam people, etc. I heard an interesting point by Rabbi Rakefet. I was just listening to his shiur a couple of nights ago. And he was just threw out this thing about silkscreen Torah. It's like, I saw a sample of it, and it's too perfect. It's an interesting idea. Meaning, maybe the Sifrei Torah is supposed to be written over, and they're not supposed to be written perfectly. This was so perfect that it didn't look like I don't know what to do. These policies will be made by people way above my pay grade. Now, one interesting thing to point out specifically with this parsha. The parsha of Vayayim Shemoa, so you get into the following issue, and it requires a little bit of background. So if you look through your chumashim, you'll notice there are what they call psuchos, and then there are things called sedumos. what are we talking about? Psuchos and Tzumos. So in the art scroll Chumash, if you look through, there are spaces between, we'll call them paragraphs sometimes, right? And sometimes that space stops in the middle of the line and the rest of the line is empty. And sometimes it's just a gap in the line itself. So and there might be a samach or a pei there, right? Samach stands for stumos, that it's a closed break, right? As opposed to psuchos, which means that it's an open break, that the line stops where it is, and then there's nothing left on that line, and the chumash continues with the next line, right? So that you'll see in all Sefer Torah. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious. You know, it's one of the defining characteristics when you look at a Sefer Torah. So you see that there's breaks in the lines accordingly. So the same breaks appear in Tefillin, sort of. So these are, what's his name? This is here.
Noach.
Noach, right? These are Noah Schreiber's Tefillin that we sort of retired a couple of weeks ago. So these are the shell yad. So just as there are psuchos and stumos when it comes to Sefer Torah, there are also going to be psuchos and stumos when it comes to tefillin, right? You're going to have to write them also with some kind of gaps. I'll hold off a second. Let's just do a little bit of background with regards to the Sefer Torah itself. So when you have and by the way, there's a mesorah when there are supposed to be these psuchos and stumos. In fact, the Rambam, in his Mishnah Torah, where he discusses the psuchos and the stumos this year, right? So he actually gives you his list of where there are supposed to be gaps in the Sefer Torah. Now it's a little bit ambiguous, meaning if that was, and there are, by the way, machlokasim about where they're supposed to be. So there are a little bit. So Rambam gives his opinion. It's a little ambiguous what he means, but he only gives you the opening sentence. He doesn't give you the closing sentence, and you know, Vayidver Hashem Lo Shelim Mor could appear like multiple times. It's unclear what exactly he is, and there are some disputes within Sefer Torah as to which where all the psuchos and stumos are supposed to be. But they are essentially following, according to the way the Rambam lays them out, where they're supposed to be peis and where they're supposed to be samachs. Right? Good so far. Okay. And if you mess it up, by the way, so in theory, if you mess it up, so it's like having a letter messed up, the entire thing could end up being puzzle, right? So the stakes are pretty high, ensuring where the peis and samachs are supposed to be. So when there is a... it's out of order.
The parsha's out of order?
No. Where it's out of order in the shir.
Oh.
Okay, so now what happens? So in most of our Sefer Torah, we're used to seeing a gap of a samach. Or a gap of a pei, right? There's a gap in the middle of the line. So what happens if a sofer is getting towards the end of the parsha, right? End of that section, and now finds himself finishing the section at the end of a line, right? So what does he do then? Right? So now you're not going to be able to put that gap in appropriately, right? How are you going to then be able to work in that gap? So that ends up being a machlokas between the Rambam and the Rush, right? So the Rambam holds that if you're in a place where you're supposed to have a psuchos, where you're supposed to have a line end, which is considered a harder break, right? A larger break in the pasuk, and you end up getting to the end of the line and needing to put in the putting that psuchos. So what does the Rambam say you should do? You should skip the next line in a chumash. You should skip the line, right? That way you'll have the psuchos, and then you'll pick up the line after with the next section. That's the shita of the Rambam when it comes to psuchos. What about stumos, if there's not going to be enough space there? So the Rambam holds that what? The Rambam holds that you should leave a gap, a little bit of a gap at the end of the line, and a little bit of a gap in the beginning of the line. That you should, you need to have a gap in the beginning of the next line. Meaning the Rambam, how are you going to differentiate psuchos and stumos if you're at the end of the line? So according to the Rambam, a psuchos, you're going to leave the line blank, And in istumos, you're going to begin in the middle of the next line. So in fact, in a Sfardi mezuzah, this is where this sort of comes up a little bit. It's not going to look that different, but in a Sfardi mezuzah, you'll get to the end of the line here, and then the next line begins indented into the next line. That's because there's a stumo between these two parshias. Okay? The Rush, however, holds the opposite, and Ashkenazim generally follow the Rush. The Rush holds that if there is a psuchos that you finish at the end of the line, you won't skip a line, you'll only indent the next line. Well, if it's a stuma, says the Rush, you'd have to skip a line. So now you run into a problem. If you're going to have a stuma, or a psucha, either way, according to the Rambam, it says to do one thing, which according to the Rush, will be telling you the wrong thing. Right? If you skip a line, according to the Rambam, that means that it's a psucha, and according to the Rush, that means it's a stuma. And if you do the wrong thing, the entire Sefer Torah is puzzled. Right? So that's a machlokas. That might distinguish between Sephardi and Ashkenazi Sefer Torah, but Sephardim would follow the Rambam, Ashkenazim would follow the Rush. It would actually say that you can't use the other one Sefer Torah. Right? But how do we solve this problem? We just avoid the issue. That if you look in a Sefer Torah today, it's not going to happen. It's right because all Sefer Torah today are actually following a general blueprint. There is something called a Tikkun Sofrim, which has become sort of the standard of Sefer Torah. And nowadays, all Sefer Torah, unless maybe the Sofer messes up a little bit here or there, but pretty much all Sefer Torah are written exactly the same way. All starting with the same, every column starts with the same word, every column ends with the same word, the psuchos and stumos end up being the same place on the page. This was worked out a couple of decades ago, and in the Sefer Torah, you don't have to worry about this problem anymore. Okay, we're good so far? The question, however, does come up in a serious way in Tefillin. Okay, what is supposed to be the breaks in a parsha of Tefillin? So, we follow the breaks that appear in the Sefer Torah itself. So, in the first two parshios of Tefillin, they're both psuchos. So, the two parshios that appear at the end of Shmos, Vaya Kadeshi Kol Bechor and Vayaki Ivyecha, they end with psuchos. So, as you see, there is a psucha at the bottom, right, and begins at the start of the next line, right? You see that, right? It starts, it ends in the middle, right? Those watching on TV, right? Right. You see, it ends there, at the line ends, and then you start in the beginning of the next line, right? Same thing with the second parsha, it ends in the beginning of the next line, okay? Same thing with the third parsha, right? The third parsha as well will ends in the beginning and starts the next line. The problem is between the third and the fourth parsha. Why is that a problem? Because the third to the fourth parsha, the third parsha ends with a stuma in a Sefer Torah, and the fourth parsha begins with a stuma in the Torah. If you look in your Chumash, in the beginning of Vaya Im Shema Tishmuel Mitzvosai, right? So that parsha has a samach right before it. So what do you have? You have two samachs, right? You have a parsha ending with a stuma and beginning with a stuma, but they have to be on different lines. Why do they have to be on different lines? Because in a standard tefillin shel yad, right, it's the equivalent of having different columns of a Sefer Torah, right? There, you see, going there. He happened to have his on two different pieces of parchment. Generally today you'll have him on one piece of parchment, right? So how do you adjust from one stuma, one line to the next when you have stumos there? So according to the Rambam, so if we just take that, according to the Rambam, what would the Rambam say? The Rambam would say that you have to indent the next line. While according to the Rush would say that you have to skip a line, which then work against each other, right? You're not going to be able to do it. So if you look at Sfardi Parshios, and I don't have a Sfardi Parsha here, the Sfardi Parsha will end Shema at the end of the line, meaning if you look here, instead of where it says Uvisharecha at the end of Shema, instead of it have there being space till the end of the line, right? A Sfardi Parsha will actually have Uvisharecha go all the way to the end of the line, and that way you begin the Parsha of Vayayim Shemoa in the middle of the next line. That's according to the Shita of the Rambam. According to the Rush would say that's no good, because you're not going to have any distinction there. That's going to be a psucha according to the Rush. So So what does the Rush say to do? The Rush himself, I'm not sure what the Rush himself would say to do, but he would say you would need to leave a gap. He would say you would need to leave a gap on both, which is what we do. But I can't get to details. So how do we paskin on this issue? Let's just see what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So in Shulchan Aruch, in Simon Lamed Vav, Os Lamed, sorry, Lamed Bez, Simon Lamed Bez, Os Lamed Vav. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins, Yase Kol Parshioseha Psuchos, Chutz mi Parsha Achrona. All the Parshios need to be made Psuchos at the end, except for the last Parsha, Haksuva B'Torah, Shehi Vayayim Shemoa, Sheyasena Stuma Vimshina Pasel, which you should make Stuma, and if you mess it up, what does he say? Pasel. No good if you mess up the last parsha. Now the Ramah adds in v'yesh machshirim b'kulam psuchos. There are those that are machshir with all of it. U'medinas elu nogin af parsha v'yam shemoa b'rosh hashita kishar parshias. He says in our country, by us, this is what the Ramah describes. We start v'yam shemoa at the top of the next line, like the other parshios. Meaning he says the Ashkenazim hold that it's not ma'akiv. Now you'll notice we don't. Right, we don't hold like the Ramah. The Ramah would say that Vahaya should begin the line. Right, we don't do that. We have Vahaya in the middle of the line. Why is that? Because the Taz suggests that you could fulfill both the Rush and the Rambam's position by having a gap at the bottom here and the top there, provided that it's a smaller gap than the requisite size. I don't want to go there, but it is a lesser, right? It doesn't, like these, it ends in the middle of the line, right? This, we're makbid that it end towards the end of the line, less than 9 small letters from the end. Okay, that's what we're going to do. Less than 9 small letters from the end. And Vahaya begins less than 9 small letters from the beginning of the line. So you fulfill both of those, suggest the Taz, you would be Yotze both the Rambam as well as the Rush, and therefore you could be Yotze according to all Shitos. Now, the Svardim don't hold like the Taz. There's actually different ways of doing the Taz, but okay. So nowadays, all Ashkenazi Parshios pretty much are made in accordance with the Taz, like these parshios are made, right? Where you have the it ends in the middle here and begins the start of the next line. Svardi parshios are not made that way. Svardi parshios are made. I think I have a copy here from Rabbi. In Rabbi Malinowitz's sefer here, he has a copy of a Svardi parsha where my letter is. Here, I'll show the people online here. Right, it ends at the end of the line and begins in the middle of the next line. That's a Sephardi Parsha, which is going to be different than an Ashkenazi Parsha. And according to Sephardim hold that for Sephardim, you can't use Ashkenazi Tefillin. So this is like a big deal, right? Sephardim really need to get Sephardi Tefillin, because according to Sephardi Poskim, you can't use Ashkenazi Tefillin. In fact, here in the Piskei Tshuvos, I looked up to see what he says. He says they say that even if all you have access to is Ashkenazi tefillin, a Sephardi should not make a bracha on them. Because they hold that dear puzzle. I mean, put them on, because you don't have nothing else. But you should not make a bracha on Ashkenazi tefillin. Same question might be with regards to mezuzahs. Mezuzahs have the same sheer parsha issue. In a Ashkenazi mezuzah, you see the end of the first paragraph ends with a little bit of space at the end, and the second paragraph begins with a little bit of space in the beginning, while a Sephardi parsha ends at the end of a line. The first paragraph ends at the end of the line, and the second paragraph begins in the middle of the second line. So that is a machlokas between the two. However, when it comes to mezuzahs, it could be that having parshios separation in mezuzahs are not ma'akiv at all. So therefore, most Sephardi poskim would say that you could use regular Ashkenazi mezuzahs. This is actually just getting... Okay, so that's the lachian. I would just stop and add for... Okay, so that's it. Now, we just add one thing, because I'm actually working on this with a specific case here now. I'm not sure what to do, right? How true is that? That mezuzah, that Sephardim... If you're assuming, like, this is my question that I'm wondering about right now, though. do all Svardim today that say that they're Svardi and eat Kitnius on Pesach, do they necessarily have to follow these Svardi Psach? I mean, if you tell them this, they might not have any idea what you're talking about, right? They say, what do you mean? A Svardi person comes to me to buy tefillin for his son. So I say, so you should get Svardi Parshios. And he looks at me like I'm crazy. So what do you mean he'll get Svardi Parshios? I don't have Svardi Parshios, right? So what do you do in that case? Do we say that, well, you're Svardi and your tefillin are puzzled too? Or do we say, not necessarily. Maybe the idea that we have like these leagues in Judaism where, you know, like in Major League Baseball, the National League has no designated hitter, and the American League, they have a designated hitter. And never the two shall meet. Right? That's the law of the two lands, and we're not going to, or maybe it's not so solid the divisions anymore. Right? It could be that as the communities have mixed together, it could be that maybe the things that a Sephardi might hold as ma'aki for a Sephardi, or an Ashkenazi might hold as ma'aki for an Ashkenazi, maybe we're not so strong about that anymore. And perhaps a more general minhag has come to form. So I've sort of threw this out onto a rabbinic listserv that I'm on recently, and people are fighting it out, this question. Because the question is, somebody came to me with somebody who affiliates Sephardic, they have you check their mezuzahs, and you know, but most, you know, 3/4 are good, and they need to replace a few. Now, all of their mezuzahs are Ashkenazi mezuzahs. So the ones that they replace, should they replace them with Sephardi mezuzahs, or should they replace them, or should they just stay consistent and say we're gonna continue on? So I threw that question out to the rabbinic listserv, and people are fighting it out as we speak, this issue. I'm more interested in sort of hearing what Sephardic Rabbanim say. On the other hand, if a family lives here in Philadelphia, so you know, they aren't really Sephardic Rabbanim. I'm not sure where they would go for a Psak Halach. You go to the Ashkenazi rabbi. So are we still solidly within our two separate camps when it comes to these types of halachos? I'm actually not sure at this moment what the halacha is. Rabbi Gabai is right, but he's not really in our halachically. It's like sort of a different city. I mean, he's down there. People here don't necessarily have a relationship with Rabbi Gabai. All right, have a good day.